Welcome to Keep the Hotel Empty. Today we've kept the hotel empty to welcome in Vlad from Bellos Audio. Vlad, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Oh man, I'm so glad you're here. Now I know you are an expert in in-ear monitors and you've got some very cool things going on with your new X4 in-air monitors. And I want to get to that because that's really personally interesting to me and I think a really cool front. But I kind of want to do what we always do and start at the start. Tell me how you get in to having passion for audio and being an audiophile and where this starts to trip your trigger personally?
Well, it goes back probably, how I got into music. I mean, if we want to go back that far.
But, yeah.
When I was in high school, my older brother and I kind of started talking about playing music and doing kind of starting a band.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't go very far. And so we recruited two of our younger brothers.
Nice.
And so we had
built
a four
in
piece. And it was good. And I originally was a bass player. But then how it happened when we started recording in the studio, our older brother, who wasn't in the band, he was kind of our engineer at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, you know, Vlad should try singing. I heard him singing, you know, somewhere in his room at some point. And so I was like, I didn't really want to do it, but I didn't feel like being the lead singer. But then
right.
It so happened, you know, I was pushed in front of the microphone and I started singing and it sounded okay. And so we kind of rolled with it. I went from bass to guitar and you know, rhythm guitar, just to kind of keep the rhythm going. You know?
Right, right.
Yeah, and so at some point, we heard about in-ear monitors and how, you know, you can hear so much better with them. This was like early 2000s. And mm-hmm. so I think in 2002 or 2003, we decided to save up all the money we had and to get in-ear monitors.
Yeah, because that was not cheap then. Well, it never
is.
It
was quite expensive. I think our first set was like $800, but you know, early 2000s, that was
right.
a lot of money.
Exactly.
And it's not just the in-ears that we needed. We needed the wireless packs and then a mixing board, and so it was a chain reaction kind of thing that happened. But we did it, and. My first experience was okay, because I had a fit issue on my right ear, and I think we refitted it 5 times.
Dang.
And still didn't get it right where it felt comfortable. And so eventually I kind of said, that's enough. You know, I don't think it's going to get any better. And so I just rolled with it. And so that was kind of my experience and definitely experienced the benefits of custom ears. I was playing bass, and so the bass was huge. It was anywhere you went on stage, it was there. So it was kind of a mixed experience for me. Right?
And at that point, are you talking about using single driver in-ears?
It was single driver dynamic, single dynamic driver.
Okay, so that's a huge difference too, right?
It is, because well, now we're doing multi-drivers, and we can get into that a little bit later. But
right.
At the time, it was just one, and it was still a big step up from the floor wedges, and it was
especially singing. Yeah.
Yes, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. But that right side in the ear, I later realized. When we started manufacturing our own custom ears, it was just my tricky kind of ear. It was hard to get right because the canals on the right side, they have 2 bends in them. They're really tricky. My right ear was tricky. And so, of course, actually, we solved that problem eventually. We designed a technology that solved that. But going back, so got into music, and we actually did two studio albums with my brothers and
cool.
a band called Sons of Day. And we played a lot of we were a Christian band, so we played a lot of churches, youth camps, and some big festivals, actually. We won a Battle of the Bands in 2009. And nationally, we went to Nashville. And
very cool.
It was a national battle of the bands, and we took first spot. So that was
nice.
Pretty cool, and it put us on the front, like the big stages all over the country. And so that was a lot of fun. That kind of validated, of course, that, hey, you know, this, you know, we kind of, you know, we had a lot of fun doing it, and we had some success. So it really kind of, we stuck around in the industry. But we, at one point, took a break from touring because we were a little bit worn out. We were an independent band, so we were just driving around the country.
Right.
And our older brother, that engineer, he started tinkering with custom in-ears. And he started his own company, and he started first remolding them and repairing them, and then eventually designed his own. And so, of course, it being kind of really close to something we know and use on the road and on stage, we decided to kind of help him with the company. And, you know, as employees, we started working and doing various things in the company.
Because at this point, you had been playing all these shows with the still this ill-fitting right one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, and then we were to take a three-month break, which turned into almost 10 years, almost a decade. because we found ourselves, I mean, I'll speak for myself, I found myself really it was very familiar industry. So the music industry. But we were at home. We were at home every night. You know, you go home and you have a paycheck. It was
right.
A steady paycheck. And honestly, I was very thankful to have a job like that.
Right.
And then you leverage kind of the contacts in the industry that we had to bring in artists and musicians to say, hey, we have a product here. And if you want to try it, let us know. And then I kind of gravitated towards the artist relations part of the company.
So was that step one when you start working with your older brother is start to reach out to the community that you had as performers?
Yes. Yes. Yep. That was, I mean, it kind of naturally happened because at first I was a technician doing, I was detailing like the impressions when they send them in. Because you need to go to an audiologist, like an ear doctor, get impressions, custom impressions made, and then you mail them to us.
Ah.
And then we, going off of that, make you a custom fitting earphone. So
okay.
When those came in, I was the one that inspected them and trimmed them to where they need to be and basically shaped the what the custom in-ear would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my job at first. But on the side, of course, we would reach out to musicians and artists and kind of, you know, any connections we had in the industry to bring them in, you know, to try the product.
So that's phase one of growing the business?
Yes, yes. That was, and we went through some massive growth there. And, you know, I think it was 4 to 5 years in where we became one of the top three custom ear monitor companies. And the company's called 64 Audio.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have heard about it, you might not. But if you've ever researched the products like custom in-ears, you would have seen it.
Right.
It would have been one of the options. What we had done that was very special is something actually we're doing to this day is always pushing the limits of what technologies we can kind of come up with and pushing the limits of the experience of the custom in-ear, whether that's in the sound portion of it, how can we make them sound better? Or, and then the other part is how can we make them, you know, sit more comfortably? And so we kind of had, we always had this kind of mentality of let's not sit still and let's solve new problems. And since we were musicians, we could quite easily put ourselves in the shoes of the customer.
Right.
And be like, you know, this is subpar. Like we'd take it out on a weekend and play some shows and be like, you know, this is really annoying or, you know, this or that. And we would address it. We'd come back on Monday morning and we'd be able to address it. And find a solution for it. So I think that's what kind of separated us from the other companies at the time, that we were actually musicians. using our own product.
Yeah, huge leg up.
Yeah.
What do you think are some of those challenges specifically that you guys overcame in that first 3 to 5 years that got you to that point in that period?
So one of the first breakthrough technologies understanding what happened when you seal a custom – well, when you seal your ear canals with custom in your monitors, because our ears were not really meant to be plugged up. Because when you plug them up, even with your fingers, you can hear the occlusion effect. Your voice gets really boomy. And then that's one thing that happens. And then we also looked at why – you know, after about 30 minutes into a set, why do our ears feel kind of tired, and or the sound actually starts to dip a little bit, like the high frequencies, and then you, what do? You turn your pack up, because you kind of you're especially if you're playing high energy music, you want to be in it, you want it to be have this energy. So one of the first breakthroughs was realizing that when you seal your ears completely with the conventional custom inner.
Right.
That's how they all do it. They fully have a seal, of course, to isolate the outside sound. Because if you're next to a drummer, you need a seal. You want a controlled mix.
That's and you'd refer that. To that as passive noise cancellation?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Passive noise cancellation. And so when you did that, basically the miniature speakers, the drivers inside the ear, the custom earphones, when the diaphragms would move, it would create air pressure in your ear canal because it has nowhere to go.
Right.
It's a sealed ear.
Right.
And the only thing that could really take the impact was the eardrum because it's really soft and sensitive. And so one of the discoveries that we had made is that when the ear, when this air pressure was going in a sealed ear canal, your eardrum was moving much more than it should, which caused ear fatigue.
Right.
And that's why after every night, if you push your pack more than you should have, right, you would feel kind of your ears very tired. And, of course, if you're doing that every night, you're probably going to end up with some hearing loss.
It actually can have a mental effect on you, too, I've found.
It does, actually. It tires you down. When your ears get tired, your whole nervous system kind of is affected and you feel tired.
Exactly.
Yeah, right? And I experienced that too. So what we invented was a way to vent out those air pressures without breaking the isolation. And so we did that. And that technology really changed things because when a person used our custom in-ears, they couldn't go back.
Right.
Because the other ones felt really stuffy and kind of like you could feel the pressure. And in these ones, it felt more open, and the sound stage was bigger because your eardrums aren't getting, you know, beat up with this air pressure. You know
right,
what I mean?
Exactly. Would you say that the user's experience is akin to how over-ear headphones would be closed back and open back?
Yes. Essentially, they would, yeah. It's a similar, it's not a direct comparison, but kind of, yeah, if you know the difference between those two.
Yeah, because that's a pretty interesting thing to have a sealed environment that can still breathe.
Exactly. Yeah, so that was the first breakthrough, and it really propelled us kind of to a new level. And it was really, it was great to, you know, when you work on something so hard and then it's validated. You
right.
know, people hear that and they're like, wow, I can't believe, you know, I can't believe I was living without this before, you know?
So yeah,
it was really great.
That leads me to the question. At the time when you guys are developing this, are you thinking to yourself, man, how could no one have thought of this before? Or this seems too easy? This seems too obvious maybe rather?
Well, that's the thing about, you know, solving complex problems. Usually the solution's very simple.
Right.
And you're thinking like, well, and then someone might look from the outside and say, That's so simple. That's kind of almost obvious, right? But, you know, the truth is nobody's done it before because it wasn't very obvious.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I mean? So, yeah. We also actually felt quite a bit of a pushback from the industry saying, no, your claims aren't true because they didn't have a technology to solve it.
So, yeah, right. Well, it seems counterintuitive if you're into thinking one direction.
Exactly, exactly. So, but definitely the industry noticed, you know, the customer did, the musician. And so it was a huge success. And second breakthrough would be we went to a full 3D modeling environment when it comes to designing custom in-ears. So before, people would send in a an impression. We would by hand, you know, I would sculpt it really using tools to, and then we would make it. It was the conventional way. We then developed a process where you would 3D scan the impression, and it would provide us a 3D file that we would take into a 3D CAD program to design the whole in-ear there, and then we 3D print it.
So before you were casting it?
Yes. Yeah. And then we switched to 3D printing, and that brought the level of comfort through the roof, because every little – the conventional process, it removed a lot of the detail of the impression shape. The 3D one would be able to follow all the little dents and curves and everything that made a custom in your monitor, the shape of your ear. And so it was a much more comfortable seal and a comfortable fit. So that was a huge breakthrough, because moving to that type of environment was required a lot of research.
And what is that process like? Do you start where you're just sitting at a table like this and someone says, you know what, we got to find a better way than this casting?
Yeah. Well, what actually that venting technology that vented actually pushed us to go 3D, because, you know, some of the greatest things or discoveries, I guess, in life, we knew we knew the technology was available, but how do we implement it? That required a lot of work. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to do that work unless you have to.
Right.
So in order to have that first breakthrough of the venting, we had to have the 3D printing, or else you had neither. Really, it was kind of a cascading effect or a domino effect, you know? So yeah, that was it was trying iterations of the design, and like, it's not possible unless we do 3D printing. And so let's figure out how to do that.
So. Just because of the intricacies of it all?
Yeah. Yeah. And plus you're dealing with such a small product.
It's, right.
You know, you're not dealing with something that's this big. It's tiny. So
what's the first rounds of in-ears looking like that you were doing with the 3D printing, and how long have you been doing that?
Well, we've been doing that ever since. So
so you got on board with that pretty quickly then.
Yeah, that was 2015. Yeah. So it was 5 years in that we had to do that. And then the next step, and then the third breakthrough was it's called a tubeless technology. So, and if we just dive into this real quick.
I was going to say, I definitely want to get there. We can do that portion. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. So the conventional design, you have a driver, which is called a balanced armature technology, which is derived from hearing aid technology.
Okay.
But they've gotten so much better over the years, where they do a full range sound instead of just like a mid range for a hearing aid, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And that means, you know, that those speakers were tailored to be reproducing most specifically the range of frequencies that the human voice lies in,
yes.
Not what you'd need to perform music.
Exactly. But advancements over the years have taken, and these drivers were doing a full range sound, which was pretty incredible. And so.
But you're still talking about doing a full range sound from a single driver, yeah?
You could. But it's obviously not going to be as good as a multi-driver.
Right, because I think one of the things that I definitely want to make sure we kind of talk about for the people that aren't like necessarily so hip to how this works, you know, a single driver, like you're saying, a driver is a driver speaker, same word. A single driver can put out a full frequency range, but when you have multiple drivers, that does what for you?
Well, you're able to tailor every driver like a speaker on a panoramic kind of sound system. You're taking, you're choosing a driver that's really good at either the highs, the mids, or the lows. And they're specifically made for that frequency range so that they're very efficient in that range. And so instead of making a driver that has to do all of them, you break it up. You know, like any studio speakers,
mm-hmm.
or like I said, you know, line array, panoramic, you know, sound system. So, yeah, that's the idea. And so what they would do is, you know, the conventional designs, you have the driver and then you put a, there's a sound spout, you put a tube on it to take the sound to the canal stem. And what we had discovered is that, you know, when you put sound through a tube,
it really changes the sound.
It cuts the highs, the lows, it really limits it. And so when we opened it up, it was a direct radiating type of sound. And if we, because we were working in a 3D environment, we could make a pretty large channel where all the sound just traveled through. And one driver with no sound tube sounded better than four conventional tube drivers. And so it changed the game because everyone up to that point was adding more drivers to get more fidelity.
Right, exactly.
And then we were able to do with a four-driver model what an 18-driver model was doing. And we actually had both products, an 18-driver and a four-driver tubeless, and they would be competing against each other sound-wise if you listened to them. And so that was another huge kind of breakthrough in custom in-ears.
Do you think that some of that is the nature of, like, the psychoacoustics that we all have baked into our brain? We're just not used to hearing things so close without any air?
I think there is part of that. Part of that is I think one of the things is the venting helped kind of remove the air pressure. So it created an equal pressure in your ear canal on the outside. So that made it more natural. And I think us removing the sound tubes make the sound more natural too, recreating kind of. So when we got into this, we had, you know, the conventional custom in-ear, but plugging up your ear and doing it the way it was done, it was good enough at the time. But as the years went on, we almost kind of undid the negative effects of doing it like that. And, you know, and so the third, or the fourth, I should say, in the fourth breakthrough that we had, and now what we're doing with Bellos Audio is we address the fit and comfort. Because what we were able to do with the 3D printing was a big step forward. It was much more comfortable, but I still had a problem in my right side, both sides, but mainly my right side. And if I had just smiled when I'm wearing them on stage or just raised my eyebrows, my right side just pops out and you kind of have to push it back in. And considering these are custom in-ears that you pay, you know, $1,500, $2,000 sometimes, depending on which model you get.
Right.
That's a really big thing, you know, to have to deal with that. It's still kind of a nuisance.
Oh, and it's jarring too when all of a sudden it gets loud.
Yeah. So we looked into this issue, and we kind of just kind of looked in. First of all, how can we make custom ear monitors more comfortable? How do we remove the fit issues? Because once in a while, you will have clients, you have to refit them after they get them because they're not fitting exactly like they should. And we had found that most fit issues are around the canal area. And it's because it's long, like I mentioned before, it's got two bends in it. And the conventional wisdom has always been, if we make the canal longer, it'll stay better in the ear. Well, we had found the longer you make the canal, the more fit issues, the more discomfort you have. And also, one of the biggest breakthroughs was when you make any facial expressions, your ear canals actually are flexing and changing shape. And that was, we really didn't think about it. Because I guess we didn't put in front of us kind of how can we solve this? We had so many other problems and, you know, just all these other things.
And the somewhat of the conventional wisdom was just what you said. If you make the tube longer, that would do it.
Yes.
You know?
But
thank you for sticking with us. We hope you're enjoying the episode. We'd like to take this opportunity to give a shout out to our number one supporter, Tweed Suit Shop.
Hey guys, I'm Donald with Tweeds. If you're ever in the market for a custom suit, tuxedo, sport coat, whatever it might be, we'd love the opportunity for you to come in, take all your measurements, make sure we get you the perfect fit and the perfect look. We'd love to see you at one of our locations.
So remember, if you want to get yourself fresh like this, tip to tail, see Tweeds at one of their locations in Sarasota, St. Pete, or Tampa. Please enjoy the rest of the episode.
We really sat down and we thought about this. How do we cut down on fit issues, make them more comfortable? And how do we solve the problem of when you're making a facial expression or if you're singing or talking, your jaw's moving, your ear canals are changing shape? How do we fix this? And so we came up with a technology, and it's called in-air canals. So what we did is we make a custom in-ear monitor that fits you just like a, you know, it looks and sits in your ear just like any conventional custom in-ear. But what's special about it is for the canal portion of it, we put what we call it an air tip. But it looks like a universal fit soft tip.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially that's what it is. But what's special about it is that in a 3D environment, the 3D printing technology that I was talking about, we're able to perfectly place this air tip for it to make a seal at the entrance of your canal, not having to go inside. And when we did that, we have all the benefits of custom in-ear monitors. We have isolation. We have an in-ear monitor that doesn't go anywhere. It's custom fit. It's sitting right there. But on top of that, we have virtually no fit issues. And on my set of X4s, any facial expression that I make or any high note I'm trying to hit while singing, I can't break the seal. They're just sitting there. They're not going anywhere. And they look something like this if you want to take a look.
Yes, absolutely.
They look a bit different than the conventional ones. So those have the air tips on them. That's the in-air canals technology.
Okay. So for anybody watching, it's used to looking at in-ears. These look more like the traditional ends of AirPods or something like that you'd see, but with a soft tip. And not clearly not as invasive.
Yeah, as, not as long and invasive.
Yes,
yeah.
Right. And I have to assume that this design also lends to considerably less ear fatigue.
100%. If you're putting them in and out a lot, let's say if you're using them in the studio or for video editing, they're a lot more comfortable put in and out. Also, again, when your ear canals are flexing, that will cause some ear fatigue if you have a long canal stem. We don't have any of that, so they feel a lot lighter. Your ears feel fresher. And one of the benefits that we kind of didn't even really think about, but what actually happened, it was a happy accident, if you will, was that when we removed all the material from the ear canal, now we just had air. That's where the in-air canals comes from.
Right.
The sound stage became bigger.
Well, that's funny you should say that, because that's exactly what I was just going to ask you. Do you find that this is less of a proximity effect? Because that was always something I noticed, whether or not I was working with artists or I was the artist, that once you seal them off, everything seems close and it almost has a psychological effect on you, like you're actually in a smaller space.
Exactly. I think back to the first time I had custom in-ear monitors without the venting, it does feel like you are – you're really, it disconnects you from your environment.
Right.
And that is very true. And it's because you have something really far into your ears, and the isolation is like about the standard conventional custom in ears are about 26 decibels. So you've got a considerably lower volume. And when you're trying to jam with your bandmates, unless you're like, you have a bunch of stage mics and recreating that experience, the connection is a little bit lost.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Traditionally, you'd put up a crowd mic or whatever and face it out and pipe a little bit of that into the ears and you'd be good. Do you, with a situation like this, you don't, that?
It really decreases that that feeling of being disconnected.
Right.
We also brought down the isolation level. So the conventional was 26 decibels. What we did with the venting was 20. Ours is at 17 decibels. We found that that's a good balance between having enough isolation to have a good controlled mix so you can hear everything in your mix, but also enough to where you can hear a little bit around you. And because, you know, when you're a musician, what you hear is what you feel as well. And so if you can feel, if you can hear a little bit what's going on around you, that's at a, at, you know, it's a much lower level than obviously without in-ears, but if you can hear a little bit around you, you feel more connected and connection to your bandmates and the audience and where you are, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really valuable that you say that, because there's a lots of parts about performing, especially in the early days of in-ears, that kind of took some of the things that have been the same for us for thousands of years, being able to connect with your audience, feel what the art you're creating in real time, kind of took that away. It seems like a little bit of this, you're getting it back in. So let me ask you this. Do you see a world where wedges and side fills and all that stuff are a thing, or is IEM the way of the world now, and we just have to keep doing these things so we can get as analogous to when we could just rock and roll and feel it with wedges on the floor, to we're not going to kill our hearing and yeah. we can understand each other.
Yeah, I think that what happened, most people that are still on wedges right now, you know, there's like very famous guitarists and bands.
Yeah, Dave Grohl still can't use an IEM.
Yeah, and they're just like, they don't do it.
Yeah.
And the couple stories that I've heard is that they once tried them and they tried to adopt them, but it was at a stage where the product was not mature yet. And
excellent point.
Like, just I heard one guy, one artist that we've all heard about, but I don't want to, you know, mention his name, but early on, what happened was he was on in-ears, and then there was some kind of a loud sound that went through the whole system, and he had, it was a channel that was in his in-ears, and it just started screeching in his ears, and he ripped them out because, you know.
Right.
It's
painful and startling.
Painful, startling, and your hearing, you know, could be damaged. And then he never touched a set of custom in-ears after that. Now we have our monitor packs all have a limiter, and you can set that. So any sound will just, it'll squash it.
So you do your own packs as well?
We don't do our own packs. Okay. I'm just saying the...
just in general.
That's a standard feature pretty much in every pack now.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, that solves that problem. That wouldn't have happened to him if he would have been on in-ears 10 years later, right? Or whatever the time frame is. But you get the idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Just the same way I've heard some folks that are, you know, that can easily afford in-ears and the best ones in the industry, but they don't want to use them because they never fit right. And I actually went to a show once. We were delivering custom in-ears to them, and it's a band we all know, legendary. And they still had... you know, subwoofers on stage, each band member. So the keyboardist, the drummer, everyone's like, why do you guys have those? Like, because we know how much bass you can get from custom in-ears.
Right, especially with multiple drivers.
Yeah. And they're like, well, we don't get enough low end from our in-ears. And we looked into it, and we, you know, having a trained eye, we'd, hey, let me see your in-ears, the ones that you're using. It was from another brand. We look, and we're like, well, it's obvious why. Because they sent them in to get them, like, just cleaned up and serviced. And as a standard procedure, that company would just build up the canal because they would assume that would give them a better seal.
Right.
It didn't. So they were having seal issues, but they didn't know better. So they thought, this is how in-ears are. And so that for them, it was kind of a necessary evil, in-ears, rather than putting them in and just be like, oh my goodness, it's like studio sound in my in-ears. Like on the road, this is amazing, right? And they could be playing, you know, stadium gigs and just have a great mix in their in-ears.
No matter where they were.
Yeah, no matter where they go, and they can adjust everything. They can pan things left and right. And but they were deprived of that because the product they were using was kind of an older product, you know. And for them, that was their experience. And so I think, I say this sometimes, you know, to folks that say, I hate in-ears. I'm like, perfect. You're my perfect customer.
Yes, love it.
Because you're
– game on.
Give me a chance.
Yes.
To make you a custom set of in-ears that you will love. Because if it's like – they're like, I don't like jamming something in my ear. Great. We have a product that you don't have to do that anymore. Or I hate how it isolates me from, you know, from everyone around me and even the crowd. Yes, we have a product that solves that problem. Or they never fit me. They're just fatiguing and they hurt in this.
That's got to be number one.
Yeah, we have a solution for that. The most comfortable custom in-ears that you're going to ever try. And if you don't like them, send them back. We haven't had anybody send them back yet.
There so, you go.
Yeah.
So it seems like a customer acquisition is really customer education. Because it you've is. Got such a different lane that you're in a world that people have had all these other experiences with people that aren't necessarily like you.
Yeah.
So what's some of the big challenges you face with trying to make sure you can, for want of a better way of putting it, get the record straight about exactly what it is you have?
Well, to answer your previous question, are in-ears the way forward?
Yeah.
The good ones. Yes. The ones that solve these problems are definitely the way forward. And wedges, if we do our job right and we re-educate folks that had a bad experience and say, well, listen, technology has come quite a long way. It's like there's no comparison between floor wedges and custom in-ears when custom in-ears are done right. And we're doing them right. We're pushing technologies and the boundaries of the experience, you know, to make it as best as possible, best sound, best fit. And so, yes. So that wanted to answer your previous question because I didn't get to that. And your next question is, what are the
challenges you face when you try to educate people and try to make them feel comfortable with you do have something different? I guess in a way, how do you get them to take the Pepsi challenge if they've already decided they don't like Pepsi?
Yeah, that's the hardest part, honestly. And every artist, the approach is different. Whether it's, I think a lot of the business and a lot of the kind of, it's when a friend of theirs, a good trusted friend says, you gotta try this.
Mm.
And so there's no way to directly convince somebody because it requires an ear impression. That's a commitment. You know, it's not like, hey, let me just send these to you.
Yeah, right.
I wish I could. But it's not possible with custom fitting products. But so it's sometimes it just takes time, you know, where, hey, we talk about the product or somebody on their team is willing to give them a try. And they do and they say, man, yeah, these are a huge step up to what we've been using. Which is great, and then they give them a try too. But it's some folks that have had a bad experience, it really is a tough sell. It's really a tough sell because they see it all as one.
Exactly.
You know, they're like, I just didn't like it. you know. But if they give, you know, me 5-10 minutes of their time, I could explain to them, I think, you know, what was that thing that you really didn't like? Maybe we've already solved it, and then they can, you know, give us a try. So
when you're thinking about pursuing new relationships with artists, either as to endorse them or to try to get them to be open to being purchasers of your product, how do you navigate that?
Can you say that again? Sorry.
How do you navigate your artist relations? Like when you're either looking for someone that you want to partner up with and endorse, or you're looking for someone that you want to try to give them the new experience and blow the door open with your new technologies?
What's the strategy behind
it? Yeah, is you look for certain types of people? Do you look for drummers because they have problems with frequency controls? Do you look for singers because they're always the most picky?
Well, we try to have the strategy is, yes, a variety of types of musicians. And drummers, right now, like if you're drumming professionally and you're not on in-ears, you're not doing it, right?
So, yeah, exactly.
So drummers, especially because their instrument is so loud, like in-ears are a must. Even bad in-ears, they're still a must. And when I say bad, maybe they're not perfectly fitting or you know. And they don't sound exactly like you want them to sound, but protecting your hearing, drumming, if you're doing that every night, you have to have in-ears. And so that's a good way into, like, if you want to get a band on board, talk to the drummer. Most likely they have some gripes about what they're using because they're already using custom in-ears, and then we can solve that, you know, tell them we have a solution and they could maybe, you know, try it. The second one is the vocalist. Most vocalists are on custom in-ears now because the difference it makes being able to hear your own voice, especially if you're playing medium to small stages, and the drummer's quite close.
Right.
The drummer, and if you're going with wedges, like you have to have your vocal up
cranked,
the drums, at least. And then, of course, the guitarist.
And then we're inviting feedback and all the lovely things that live wedges give you.
So it makes such a big difference when you can hear yourself and you're not having to push your vocal to out scream, so to speak, everyone else, to hear your intonation. It makes a world of a difference. So drummer, vocalist is where we kind of most likely start the conversation, when it comes to, you know, getting an artist on board. And then of course we look at different genres of music as well. We want to have a good mix of, you know, artists that are using the product that can say, yeah, these things really work as advertised. So
you mentioned something that most vocalists are on custom in-ears, and that's a thing unto itself. And I know I can guess where you land on this one, but I'd like for you to maybe expound on a little bit of the differences between off the shelf in-ears and having a custom one made regardless of the technologies that come after that.
Yeah, so the biggest difference is going to be how comfortable they are, because as a vocalist, you're moving, you know, you're moving your jaw singing, and especially if you're very expressive, you're going to move, you know, you're going to open your mouth really wide, and your ear canals are changing shape. And what happens with universal fit is eventually the little earbuds start to kind of fall out. So maybe a half an hour into the set, where if it's an active show, you break a sweat, the lights are on you, and they start to fall out, and you're going to have to play with them, put them back in. So, of course, even with custom ears that pop out a little bit, you just do this. With those other ones, you kind of have to, you might even have to take them out, squeeze the little foam tip, put it in there again, wait 30 seconds until it expands. So just much more finicky, you know, more distractions. So that, that's going to be the biggest difference. Sound-wise, I mean, you can get universal fit ones that sound good.
Right.
But it's not going to be consistent, because every time you put them in, they're going to be kind of sitting a little different. And if that canal stem is facing a little bit, you're into the canal wall or something, it's going to change the sound a little bit. So all those are factors that you don't have to deal with when you go custom. They always sit the same way, always sound the same. So
right, and then you don't have any of that negative proximity effect. And
yeah, exactly, especially with our product. Yeah.
So what do you see being the next wave where we're where everything is kind of more like this?
When do I see that
happening? Yeah, like what's what? Because it does, most of the people that I know do have negative experiences with off-the-shelf in-ears. It's just one of those things, they never work quite right. Even if they sound good, they don't fit quite right. And like you said, after halfway into the show, one's fallen out, and then I'm playing with one in and one out, and that's horrible for you physically and yeah. all of the issues. So how do you think we get to the point where people can accept that to do something like a proper IEM, you actually do have to do this. You do, this is really the actual way to do it. You have to buy shoes that fit. You can't just buy any pair of shoes you like.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think it takes a time for an education process. You know, it everything takes time. You know, what's interesting is that I've been through this a few times myself, and, you know, I've always gravitated towards the marketing side of every kind of business. When I mentioned 64 Audio, then my younger brother opened up a company. It's called Fur Audio, and then this is a project called Bellos Audio. It's kind of the vision I had for what's next with custom in-ears and under $1,000, because we've also priced them really accessibly.
That's a crucial thing.
Yeah, we want as many people to be able to try them and be able to afford them, really. And So I've always been on the marketing side of launching these kind of breakthrough technologies. And that first step is always skepticism. It's kind of like, really? What you're claiming is pretty crazy. Or it's like, it's so simple, that couldn't be the solution.
But that's a part you personally enjoy.
Yeah, it's like, well, it fuels you to kind of like prove the doubters wrong. it's interesting, because if it was easily adopted, it wouldn't be as fun. It wouldn't be as
right.
You have that resistance. It of course makes it more interesting, but at the same time, every new technology has resistance.
True.
It's just, I think it's because we as human beings are so, we make habits, and we kind of, we're going through life kind of on, in this kind of patterns. Our life is in patterns, right? And so to understand a new idea or put it, and first of all, you have to realize, where does it fit into this pattern?
Right.
You know, and it takes some effort. And so that, for most people are resistant at first. But that means we still keep going, and those that are more open minded, we work with them, and
that's the inroad.
Yeah, and eventually what you realize is that those people that were skeptical, they kind of see, you know, there's another thing that we have, you know, as human beings, that kind of the herd effect. If the whole herd is now on, you know, using this, well, I don't want to be left out. So there's that dynamic. There's a point where there's resistance, and then you get to a point where there's a lot less resistance and adoption goes up. And it becomes accepted as a new kind of truth or a new fact, you know, and everyone accepts it and says, yes, this does exactly what it claims, and it just becomes a normal thing then. It's kind of a new pattern. That's their new expectation.
And then we all kind of walk around like, yeah, I knew that all the time. I did. I said that 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And we all pay that off. Yeah, I knew what was going on. You knew what was going on? I knew what was going on too. So I want to ask you one kind of nerdy question, and then we can get you out with something fun. We've been talking a lot about multiple drivers, and one of the things about multiple drivers, like you said, is you can split the frequency ranges so they can, you know, play into the strong suits of whoever is wearing them. That needs to be done by a crossover at some point. How do you incorporate, where is the crossover in the mix that allows the multiple drivers to be tailored frequency wise to whomever's on the other end.
So we use passive crossovers, and so we choose where, you know, where they cross over the frequencies. And so
how does a passive crossover work? What is a passive crossover?
Well, you add the crossover, and there's a certain quality that it has, well, a number that basically tells it where which frequencies to start rolling off on.
And how sharp it's rolling
and
off.
And how sharp.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's many different types. And so you choose, you want to have as smooth as possible, you know, crossover. So there's no dip, you know, in
right.
the frequencies. And it's not heard. So, so we choose basically there's certain drivers that manufacturers basically have a recommendation for. This driver is designed to be its peak performance is in this frequency range.
Okay.
And then we basically assemble and tinker with and see what combination sounds good. Like, well, and then we test them on a frequency analyzer.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows which curve, kind of the curve. We have a curve that we have in mind, and then of course you can't just look at the curve. You got to listen to them.
Right.
That means much more than a curve.
Yeah, hearing with your eyes can be tricky, but we all try to do it.
Yeah, but if you hear an issue, you could probably see it, address it better if you can see it.
True.
Which frequency you need to address. So yeah, there's kind of a science that goes into it, but also the using your ears and listen. What does it sound desirable? Does it sound musical? You know? That's number one.
That's what I was just going to say. At the end of the day, how important is it for you to be able to trust your ears?
Very important. Well, because at the end of the day, everyone is using their ears to listen to these things. And so we need to trust our own taste, you know, to come up with a product that then the end user just enjoys. You know what I mean? So they don't have to think about it. We do
yes.
all the thinking. And we listen and we analyze to make sure it's the desired, you know, kind of sound flavor, if you will, for that model particularly. Because some models are better at, doing like lower frequencies, which we would then recommend for bass guitars, drummers. And then some models are great just mid-range, which is great for vocalists. And then we have some models that are a full kind of spectrum, where it's great for anything, really, any instrument or that you use. So
there's way more options out there than a lot of people would think, and lots of ways to make it so it works for you the best that it can.
Yeah, yeah.
The one-size-fits-all era is not what you're into.
Yeah, I mean, exactly, because, well, it also, you know, the way we design them, for example, we have a 2-driver, a 3-driver, and a 4-driver.
Mm-hmm.
In the X series with the in-air canals technology. So the 2-driver, it has just balanced armature drivers, which are very efficient in the mids and highs, but they do a decent amount of lows. It's just the headroom is not going to be as much in the lows. So
gotcha.
If you're a bass player or a drummer, we say you probably shouldn't get the 2-driver. Unless it's just a pure budget thing, like you can't go over a certain amount, sure.
Yeah.
You it'll work for you.
Yeah.
But ideally, we recommend 3-driver, which has an added dynamic driver. So a dynamic driver is like this speaker cone right here. It's a round. It's got a much bigger diaphragm. It's able to move lower frequencies much better. So we recommend that for drummers. If budget is a thing, that is the best value model, the X3. And then the X4, we add also an ultra-high driver. That one, we call it a reference warm sound signature. It's a very balanced earpiece. It's got the dynamic low. It's got the mids, highs, and then the ultra-high to get great high-end extension. So if you can afford that one, go for that one because that's kind of the best one of them all. It has it all.
Yeah, and do you find that the ultrasonic frequencies are the ones that even get close to ultrasonic, they enhance the fidelity of all of the other frequencies?
Well, No, I don't think if they're ultrasonic, then.
Well, because the only reason I ask is because in the world of audio mastering, lots of times you'll bake in 26K, 28K, things that are way beyond audible because the theory is that they enhance what is audible.
Yeah, our in-ears just go up to 20.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't hear that as it is anyways.
Yeah, especially most musicians.
Yeah, I guess I lied. I got two nerdy questions because you made me think of another one.
Oh.
Bass frequencies. Bass frequencies are large, like 6, 7, 8 feet sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The actual physical bass wave when you're talking 60 hertz and below.
Yeah.
How do you manage having a developed bass sound in a small environment, even though you have – I know the dynamic driver helps because we're literally pushing air and the surface of the speaker. But what's the challenge of creating low end in a small environment like that?
That's a really good question because, yeah, bass has the waves basically. It needs space
right,
to develop.
And your in-air part has to help that tremendously. Even that little bit of air has to help that.
Because we're dealing in an isolated environment. So we are, you know, isolating the ear, even though we have venting, but we're still isolating it. And I think we're not dealing with the same concept there because there's an isolated system, you know, with the custom in-ear monitor, and the dynamic low drivers or any low driver that's pushing sound, it's also able to push air a little bit, which actually just is translated to sound again by your eardrum.
Right.
Now we're minimizing that, but I think that's the way it's able to work in such a small environment. And there's of course different principles that get applied there.
Exactly.
As opposed to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Wavelengths.
Yeah. Ah, it's so curious. That's the nerd part of me poking through. So sorry.
Yeah, that one comes through. But it's a little bit different. We're not tapping into it the same way that you would in an open environment.
Right. All right. Well, let's get you out here on something fun, non-nerdy. If you could make a set of in-ears for any artist, any band who you felt would really benefit most and blow the lid off getting your name out there and helping people understand the advantages that your technologies bring, who would it be?
So if I could go back in time, I would make the Beatles some custom in-ear monitors so that they can continue touring.
Because yeah.
They reportedly stopped touring because the crowd was too loud.
Right.
And their monitoring system, back then, what was it, the 60s? It wasn't a mature, you know. They probably had like a couple like little speakers pointed their way, if that even.
Couldn't hear a thing.
So they couldn't hear themselves, and so they reportedly stopped. So I think, the Beatles.
That's awesome.
Because I think the world would be a different place if they were able to tour, and maybe they wouldn't have gotten on each other's nerves as much sitting in the studio all day.
Yeah.
They'd be traveling, seeing the world. Maybe they wouldn't have broke up in the late 60s. Maybe we'd have more albums and more Beatles.
Well,
that
was a heck of a curveball answer. I appreciate that. Well, Vlad, I got to tell you, I'm really grateful for you coming down. I'm grateful for you sharing everything you did and indulging in my nerdy a little bit. We'd love to hear from you again when you got some new stuff coming out or anything you want to do. You're always welcome here, and I appreciate it so much, man.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.